Democrat Shelley Yoder is running a grassroots campaign for Indiana's 9th congressional district seat against Republican incumbent Todd Young. I'm Philip Bailey, and this is Noise and Notes. The former Miss Indiana is a first-time candidate who won a competitive five-way Democratic primary. Yoder has struggled to keep pace with Young's fundraising, but she's gotten national attention and support from progressive PACs. Thus far, the debate in the 9th district race has been about how many and where the candidates should meet to debate. I talked to Yoder about the fiscal cliff, debating Congressman Young, and why a person would want to run for a Congress that is so unpopular.
When I heard that Olympia Snowe was getting out of politics at a congressional level, I was very disturbed and disappointed. She happens to be a Republican, I'm a Democrat, but I really enjoyed watching her govern and her style, very pragmatic, common sense style of governing. And so when she said she'd had enough, that she couldn't take the lack of collaboration any longer, she wouldn't go for reelection, I felt, who is going to step up? Are there other women in waiting to take her place? And this was happening at the same time that I decided to run. So I look at this and many people ask me, Shelley, why are you running for Congress? Why would you do this to yourself? I'm doing it because I believe in fighting for the middle class. I think that hardworking families in the 9th District have gotten the short end of the stick, and I want to fight for them, and I still have a good amount of fight in me, and that's why I decided to run.
So as literally as this pillar of the Senate was wanting to leave, you saw that as a call to get in.
Absolutely.
Now, let me ask you about these issues, though, because I think that's a part of it where people really want to get into the meat of it. The theater is one thing, but the issues are another. When it comes to the national debt, the U.S. passed a recent milestone, and one that's not a good one, $16 trillion, that's trillion dollars, was passed. What should we do about that?
We definitely need to act, and one of the metaphors I like to use when talking about it is approaching our debt with more of a scalpel approach versus an axe just coming in there and slashing away at every program. There are areas where we need to look at our budget and find ways to save and begin approaching shaving those programs that no longer fully serve the American people, finding ways to close those loopholes, those corporate loopholes, finding ways to increase our revenue as well as decrease our spending. It's both sides of the checkbook. Families out across the 9th District are having to do the same thing. They're being creative. Our government needs to be creative in how we begin to approach or address this serious issue in our country.
Now, you said you don't want to face it with an axe. That's interesting because one of the first issues that's going to come up, the main issue after the election, is going to be these automatic cuts that Congress is going to face that go into effect in January. Those will be applied to defense and domestic programs equally. Is that a responsible way to deal with government spending?
Sequestration is not a responsible way. I think we need to, as I said, look at this and find ways to apply scalpel-like measures to shave away those programs and departments that have areas that could be reduced, and making investments in areas that we know our return on investment will actually increase our revenue.
Now, should the Obama administration, there's been a lot of criticism of its government spending. When Bush was in office, when he left office, the debt was about $10 trillion. It's gone to $6 trillion extra on Obama's watch. There are many who would say, oh, that was under some of Bush's budget proposals. And others will say, there's been a spending spree in Washington since President Obama took office. What do you think about this administration? What grade would you give the president?
Well, I know when I travel throughout the district, there are many people who are frustrated because they're hurting. Families are hurting because they don't have the jobs that are paying the sustainable wages that are necessary in order to pay the bills, to give a chance for families to put their kids through college or even technical training. Families are really struggling. If they have one job, they're lucky, but most are having two, three jobs to make ends meet. So that's what people are talking about. And looking at the performance of the president, I think that it's a mixed bag that's out there. People are on both sides of the fence there. But I would rather get to the business of solving our country's problems looking forward and not looking back.
Because President Obama doesn't seem to be that popular in this region, particularly in Kentucky and certainly not in Indiana, where he's expected to lose that state in this presidential race. Are you saying that maybe his grade is incomplete, as he said when recently interviewed about what his grade should be for his first term?
I think the grade is incomplete. We have families who all they know is how they feel day to day, and families feel beaten down. We see it across the board, from teachers to nurses to students to hardworking moms and dads across this district that just feel that they're working as hard as they can, but they just can't get a leg up.
How much of that blame is on the president's shoulders, and how much is on the fact that for at least half of his first term, there was a tense and ugly relationship with Congress? Most famously, Senator Mitch McConnell here from Kentucky said, you know, the chief goal out of 2010 was to make sure that President Obama was a one-term president. But there are others who would argue the Tea Party and others who were elected in 2010 were sent to Congress with a message, and that message was to keep the president in check. Who's to blame for this? Is it Congress, which has a terrible approval rating at this point, but people still like their Congress member, even though not Congress overall? Who's to blame for the mess in Washington?
Well, I don't know if all people like their Congress member. I would argue that, actually.
And I think your candidacy is the chief argument for
that. Absolutely. I would not have gotten into this race if I was pleased and satisfied with my representation and what I was hearing among others in the 9th District. So looking at who's to blame, I think it goes against the American spirit and certainly democracy to be so consumed with pointing fingers and so consumed with that was my idea, not your idea, or that was your idea, not my idea, that we have stagnated the growth of America. We have to get back to what is good for the American people. And that's our goal, moving this country forward in the right direction, getting these good, sustainable jobs, turning this economy around, making sure that families feel, middle-class families feel, that the cards are not stacked against them, but for them, then we're going to see a much different atmosphere as far as when it comes to wanting change out of Washington, because that's really what people want. They're sick of the partisanship bickering. They want leaders, and they want people who are willing to reach across the aisle, work together to get this country moving again.
Now, when candidates say that, that they're running sort of this anti-campaign campaign, your campaign recently sent out a press release trying to draw a connection between Congressman Todd Young, who's the incumbent in the Indiana 9th Congressional District, and Missouri Senate candidate Todd Akin. He's the lawmaker who made those controversial remarks about legitimate rape, that a woman couldn't possibly get pregnant unless it was a legitimate rape. Those comments raise a lot of eyebrows.
We didn't come out with any kind of a statement about that initially. It's unfortunate that Representative Todd Akin would say something so misinformed and wrong. But certainly we went about campaigning for the people of the 9th District, and it was the people who kept approaching me furious about these comments. And I had not heard any kind of statement from my opponent.
Is it fair to draw a comparison, though, between, and why did you draw this connection between Congressman Akin's comments and Congressman Young?
Congressman Young had supported legislation, a bill that Todd Akin had put forth that wanted to define rape. And it wasn't us trying to work very hard to draw a comparison. It's there. He signed on to a bill that worked to define what rape really was.
Now, his campaign says that he didn't sign on to support that until that language was taken out. How do you respond to that?
It's just untrue. We did our research, and that in fact is not true at all. He signed on before that language was changed in the bill.
It's always difficult to tell what Indiana's 9th Congressional District is. I remember the Hill-Sodrell years, when it was back and forth with that. Is it a conservative district? Is it sort of a common sense district? Is it an apolitical district? But specifically, when it comes to this issue with Akin, I think that was where it began to question what is the district's makeup. What are your views on abortion?
As a woman, I am disappointed that when it comes to issues of women's health, we have done ourselves a disservice by creating this, it's this or that kind of an argument. And this really is an argument about access to women's health care and having that accessibility be put on the plate of the woman, that she, along with her healthcare provider, should make the decisions that are best for her and her body and her life. And so that's where I am on that issue. I'm one that's not going to take, this isn't a hallmark of why I'm running, but it's one that I feel that the conversation about this very thing has been misguided for years. And instead of creating a better dialogue and discourse, it's actually shut people down, and it's created this very bifurcated way of looking at a very important issue to 51% of our population.
Now that you said that, but do you think there's a war on women that's being waged by Republicans? I know that for some Republicans, and I think particularly for women who vote Republican, that could be seen as somewhat offensive. But do you think that the Republican Party is waging a war on women?
Women are smart. We're paying attention, and we better be paying attention because there is a lot at stake here. I would say that I've been concerned about using women as a ploy, whether to get votes or not get votes. We are each unique, and women will come to the polls with a desire to find a representative who will truly speak up for them, one that they feel is somebody who will fight for them and maybe even their families.
Now, I was reading a profile of you recently, and I found a bunch of interesting things in it. But the thing that struck me, maybe just my political mind working here, it said that your parents are Republicans.
Yes.
But you're a Democrat, and a pretty liberal Democrat, fairly liberal Democrat. How did that happen?
Well, I want to first say how I define myself as a Democrat. Those were your words. I think that in today's times, people are pretty frustrated with having to fit themselves into labels and two different parties. Are you this? Are you that? I would say that my parents are Republican. That's how they identify themselves. And I grew up in a pretty conservative community and household, one that was steeped in lots of love and hard work. And I watched my parents work extremely hard to provide and do right for their children. And as I got older, and my faith and my family, ironically, made me realize that I'm actually a Democrat. As I just grew and matured and had more life experiences, I resonated more with the Democratic Party, and I love this idea of equal rights for all, and that's so much a part of the Democratic position and history, really, and that resonates with me.
Now, for you personally, not for you personally, but do you think that it's harder for women to run for public office? We saw a bit of that narrative pop up when Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama were in the Democratic primary for president. And there were some articles that came out about how, she faced, and I guess you could say the same thing for Barack Obama in regards to race, but is it harder for women to run? We see there's Emerge Kentucky here in Louisville, which recruits women to run all across the state, Democratic women. There's no really equivalent for that for Republican women, but MSNBC did a recent special on the lack of women representation in Congress, and not just in Congress, but in state houses, state legislators, governors. Is it more difficult for women?
Well, if you look strictly at the numbers, it's a stark decrease in women serving, women who are running, first of all, and those who are being elected. So whether you want to take from that it's harder for women to run, I think it's pretty easy to say, or at least it's less appealing for women to run. And maybe after I win, I can come back and we can talk about that. And I think I would say my experiences thus far have been just wonderful experiences. I mean, it's been hard work, but I wouldn't trade any of it. I think I bring to this race a unique perspective. And it is unfortunate that we don't have more women representing us. I think that that's certainly a lack. But I'm running this race because I bring a unique perspective, a unique voice, a fresh voice, since I've never been in public office before, to the people of the 9th District.
Congressman Young is considered the front runner in this race. He's raised a little over $1 million thus far. Your camp, last that I checked, it might be different now, raised a little less than $150,000. Why such a wide gap in fundraising? How do you explain that?
Well, first of all, like I said, I've never run for political office before, so I wasn't out there campaigning or fundraising. Literally on February 10th, my husband and I and our three kids, we decided that I would run for Congress. So literally from beginning to end, I just started February 10th. And it was a steep learning curve, and you know, I continue to learn so much every day. You have to first start with your inner circle. And as I said, I grew up in a really Republican community. And
so you couldn't just call your parents
up. I couldn't just call my parents.
Your parents contributed to the campaign?
Oh, yes. My parents have. But I will say it's shocking that many people do choose politics over love, over family. And that has been sobering. But it's made me a tougher candidate for sure. So am I an underdog? Absolutely. And does that make me work harder? Absolutely.
But you also, it's interesting, while your campaign is considered an underdog race, you at the same time got support from Howard Dean's PAC.
Mm-hmm.
You were picked as one of the few candidates in across the country that will get support and get buoyed by his political action committee. How did that come about?
We were endorsed by Democracy for America, and then we were invited. We made that first cut to be invited to submit our application to make it to Dean's Dozen, which is Governor Howard Dean chooses the top 12 races in the country that he feels has a progressive candidate with the greatest chance of winning back a seat in Congress. And so we said, yes, let's go for it. We worked extremely hard. The vetting process is steep. And they sent out a representative who traveled with us for 3 days. And we went throughout the district doing what we do. And that's working very hard, knocking on doors to running in parades. And when I say run, we run and make sure I shake every hand that I possibly can shake. Getting into the coffee shops and meeting voters.
Because that's what political observers there in Indiana say. They say that for you to win this race, you have to meet as many people as possible because of that fundraising gap. But is there any concern that by not having the fundraising totals and having support from an outside group, that you're not getting the right amount of fundraising support from people in the district?
You know, that's an interesting battle that I think our democracy is facing, where money is having such a stronghold on our democratic process. And what this race is about, and what Governor Howard Dean recognized, is grassroots still is alive and still is effective. What we hear again and again, and why we got that prestigious honor of being one of Dean's Dozen, actually the top six in Dean's Dozen, was he saw an extraordinary candidate who is working hard with a team 200 plus throughout a district, who is also just as motivated and excited to see a candidate that's willing to work for them. And that's what he recognized. That's what excited and ignited him to say, that's the race I want to get behind. And of course, I hope other people can get behind us and consider contributing to our campaign because they believe in the candidate and in the message. And you can do that so easily by going on our website. However, what it also says, I hope loud and clear, is grassroots movements are not dead. And we're gonna prove that come November 6th.
Now, Congressman Young, he's agreed to participate in two debates. There will be one in Franklin College in Johnson County, another in O'Bannon Publishing in Harrison County. Your campaign has said, we want more debates.
Absolutely.
While we just have two, you actually call for 13,
mm-hmm.
one in, I believe, each county in the district. We're having a debate about the debates.
Mm-hmm.
Are you satisfied with two? Obviously not, but how many would you be satisfied with?
As someone who has never run for political office before, and we started talking about debates, there was nothing but sincerity in me saying, I want to have a debate in every county. As I travel this district and talk to voters, they feel very disconnected to their representative in Washington. They feel left behind. And as I hear this, especially throughout the primary, I knew we needed to be able to get into every county. So the voters can have access to the information that they need to make an educated decision. And so there was nothing but just a, let's get into every community, sit down, have a discussion, let them bring the questions to us. It doesn't have to be fancy. We can't rely on the media to sell our message. We can just rely on each other and the wisdom and power of the voting bloc to be able to ask the questions that are important to them. That's what I wanted to see. And when they came back and said, absolutely not, it's just going to be two, we pressed a little harder and said, well, why not 13? If you can't do 13, let's do seven. You said in 2000, my opponent said in 2010 when he ran against Barron Hill, that seven was owed to the people of the ninth district. And so we said, well, then let's do seven. Even you said that that would be you would do right by the ninth district to do seven, and we're still just at two.
Now the Young campaign is arguing that these negotiations are supposed to go on in private. You're making them public. You're trying to draw publicity to yourself. You seem sincere about the debates, but you know if two were done in 2010 and Congressman Young was able to beat an incumbent then, why isn't two enough for you to make your point and beat incumbent now?
I'm not saying that it's not possible. I'm just saying that it's not ideal. I think more people need to have the information that will help them make an educated decision on November 6th.
All right. Well, Shelley Yoder, thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Philip.
Noise and Notes on WFPL is produced by me, Philip Bailey, with Joe Durso. For more, visit WFPL.org.